You're tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network, featuring news, interviews, and commentary on all things Black Hollywood. Hollywood redefined. From Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies. This is Black Hollywood Live Portraits, featuring intimate, in-depth interviews with Black Hollywood stars and influencers. Black Hollywood Live, Hollywood redefined.
You're listening to Black Hollywood Live.
And now, the host for Black Hollywood Live Portraits, Dario Kristen.
Hey everyone, you're watching Black Hollywood Live Portraits. I'm your host, Dario Kristen, and here joining me in the studio today is Courtney Stewart.
What's up, everybody?
And our very special guest, you know her from classic films such as Have Plenty, Hitch, 13 Going on 30, and now she is the star of one of the new series on BET, Being Mary Jane. We have a beautiful Robin Lee with us today.
Hello.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming in on this holiday approaching week.
Christmas is around the corner.
It's crazy.
Literally around the corner.
I bought my first gift today. I'm a little behind.
You're ahead of me, actually.
I was going to say, actually, you're ahead of me, too.
I'm like, woo.
Do you have any exciting holiday plans?
I'm going to Florida. My parents retired to Florida a few years back, and we go every Christmas and spend time with the family. And it's not a bad place. I mean, not like it's cold here, but yeah. It's 80 degrees today. But still.
That's true.
Good old California. You never know what you're going to get.
You don't know what you're going to get.
Any special New Year's resolutions you got?
You know, I made some great resolutions last year, and I kind of want to keep with that. And it wasn't like specifically saying itemizing list of things to do. It was just more of how I was going to live my life and try new things and challenge myself in new ways. And I did, and it's been a great year. I ran my first marathon.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I returned to ballet after taking 25 years off. Like, I started just living every day differently.
Yeah.
So I kind of want to continue that because it was really good. It used to be like, okay, I'm going to weigh this amount, and I'm going to do that.
Exactly. I'm going to lose 12 pounds.
Right. No more ice cream. Like, those things, they don't last very long, and they don't make you very happy. But this was just something that just continually made me happy, and I want to continue that.
What made you change how you did your resolutions this year?
I don't know. I think I just wanted to live differently and kind of enjoy life more and not look at it as something like restricting myself from doing things as opposed to bringing new things into my life and expanding the way I saw the world and expanding the way I lived and really kind of taking chances and daring myself and trying new things.
Fabulous way to live.
I need to write my resolution as well. Try new things. I need to add that to
it. Try new things.
Try new things. Yeah, don't be afraid to go out of the box.
Now, you grew up in New York.
I did. I grew up in Westchester County.
And I heard at an early age, you always knew you wanted to be an actress watching Mr. Rogers.
Yes, on the I did. Mr. Rogers and like a Romper Room, all those shows, like those PBS shows. I used to wonder how people got in the television. Like, I remember very specifically, this is back in the day with the old box TVs, you know, walking around the back of the TV and kind of looking in and like, how are these people in here and how can I get in here? And I really, really wanted to do it. And my parents they're both from Jamaica. They had that immigrant mentality about, you know, education. You're not going to go to Hollywood and be a star or an actor or anything, any kind of nonsense like that. And so they kind of just encouraged me to stay in school. And they let me do school plays and little things like regional theater, but nothing really professional until after I'd graduated college. And I was like, I think I'm ready to get out there and really do it. And they said, but there's law school. And so I made a deal with them, and I signed up to take the LSAT at the same time I started acting in New York, and I did law school and was acting the same time, simultaneously. And then after graduating law school, I moved out here.
So did you always know, even while you were in college getting your degrees, that acting was in your future? You knew that you would circle back around to it?
Probably. I mean, I think, yeah. Yeah, it was something that I was even doing while I was in school and loving it so much and wondering how I could do it and do it in not just a professional as an actress, but I started thinking like a backwards way. Like maybe I could have my own studio or I could be a producer or I could go into entertainment law like and then put myself in my own films like so I can get a tiny little part. And then I thought, you know what, why don't I just pursue what I really want to pursue as opposed to feeling like the only way to go about it is the business way or the legal way, or legal meaning as a lawyer and not the illegal way. Because there's that, too.
There is that.
What was the catalyst for you to finally make that leap and decide, I'm doing it today? Like, that's where I'm going.
I don't know. Just this realization that you only live once. And if I didn't try it, I was only going to be kicking myself years down the line, and just to jump in and do it.
And you have kids. So if your kids wanted to grow up to be actresses, no. What would you say? Or would you make them?
People ask me all the time, like, oh, aren't you sending them auditions? And no. I used to say that I would let them do it until they realized what was going on, and then I wouldn't let them do it. But they're already past that age now. Like, my youngest is, my daughter's 4, and I feel like she would get it. And there's so much rejection and so much heartache and disappointment in this business. I'd hate to put that on a child who's still trying to form their identity and become a person and to have, you know, you want to do everything you can to build their confidence and their strengths. And anyone telling them they're not good enough, I mean, they're going to get that out there in the real world anyway. I don't want to do it to them at the age of 5 or 8 or 13 even. Like, live your life a little and become a person, become who you're going to be before you get out there and you make the choice yourself. I don't want to push them into it. I mean, I suppose if one of them was begging me, I would have to be true to that, but they're not, and I certainly don't want to encourage it.
And now, kind of started your career, you were working at Elle Magazine, correct?
Yes.
In the editorial department?
Yes.
And then, like, you studied abroad?
Right. I interned there all throughout college, and then I spent my junior year in Paris and worked for their French office while I was studying in Paris, and it was the most magical year of my life. Paris is...
Was it culture shock at all, just like being there?
It was culture shocking that I'd taken 8 years of French before ever getting off the plane. And I got off the plane and I was like, I don't know what these people are speaking. This sounds nuts. Because, you know, in French class, my French teachers in high school at least did not have good French accents. And it was like you're conjugating verbs like je suis, tu es, il est, elle. And you get off the plane and they're talking to you like... And they've got these accents and like... Oh my goodness, I remember getting yelled at in the supermarket a couple of times. Food is a really big deal in France.
Oh, yeah.
And,
yes.
And for good reason. I mean, they're excellent at it. But you go to these grand marchés, which is where they have like... I guess it's like Kmart before we even had Kmart. I mean, I didn't know anything like that growing up. But they have supermarkets where you can also get clothes and like these magnificent places like Monuprix and Inno and these like really big...
I love the way you said that.
I remember going there to buy lunch. Like, there's one near our school, and I just wanted a little piece of cheese. And I was like, un petit peu de fromage. And they're like, and she was asking me, she's showing me, like, comme ça, comme ça, comme ça. And I was like, and I was trying to keep saying smaller, smaller, but I couldn't think of how to say smaller. I was saying a little bit. And then she finally was like, moi, au bleu. I was like, moi, moi. Like, yeah, it was. It's one of those days you went home and you stand up and you're like in shock and you're like, oh my gosh, she yelled at me. The front end of the fromage lady yelled at me. Yeah,
it was an experience.
And then I once got slapped. I'm sorry, I don't know why I didn't think
this.
No, it wasn't that bad, but they have these things called stand de dégustation, which is like sampling stands, like in the supermarket when they have like little pieces of whatever, crackers and cheese, whatever. And I went to take, you know, like they have a Costco, right? Have you guys been to
Costco? Oh, yeah. Costco.
So I went to take a piece of whatever it was, and it was good, and I went back, because, you know, I'm a starving student. I go back for a second piece, and she kind of gives me a look. And the third time I go back, she slapped my hand. C'est Sophie. And I was like, oh, my gosh. I was hit. And, of course, I'm looking at her like, is this legal? Can she hit me?
Right. This is abuse right now?
It's like, that's the French way, I guess. Yes. So that kind of culture shock I dealt with.
And do you speak French in your house now to your kids?
I do. I'm fluent now. I was not when I was living there, and I really kind of worked on it my year there, but then also continuing to study and keep up my relationships with French-speaking people, and then my years at Elle and my friends that I've met through the magazine there. And I kind of made the decision that I was going to raise my kids bilingually, no matter who I married, no matter where I lived, because I felt like it was a gift that... I could give them, and I wish I'd had it because it was such a struggle for me. And I'm so into learning about different cultures and languages and life outside of just like what we know and what we're familiar with. I want to give my kids that opportunity and that advantage. And so I'm raising them bilingually in L.A. And my husband doesn't speak any French. It has not been easy.
But it's I wish I knew French. I just know a little.
Je parle français un peu.
Voilà.
I don't want to say too much because then Robin will start speaking to me back and I'll be like,
oh, no, that's problem,
I don't know that. That's where it is cut off.
So other than obviously progressing in your French life, what was the best thing that you took from sort of that experience so early on?
to not be afraid to try new things and get out of your comfort zone and explore. I mean, I was so many miles from my parents and my culture, and you know, we're also a very Jamaican family, and I was far from that, and I endeavored to make some Jamaican meals living in Paris, which is like that I was trying to make. We make these things called Johnny cakes, so like dumplings.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I had to get the baking soda. I didn't know how to say baking soda, or was it baking powder? Baking powder. I did not know how to say it, and I couldn't find it in any French. I mean, like, so like hunting that down to make my Jamaican meal in my tiny little Paris apartment. So I mean, it was just, you know, it was great, and I made friends. And once I was comfortable with it, and comfortable not being able to fully communicate, and just have to kind of put yourself out there.
Yeah.
It made me feel like, God, I can do anything. Like, here I am, like a student, and I'm living here, and I'm so far from everything I know, and like, I'm making my way in the world.
Doing
like,
it big, I'm doing it.
Yeah, it just felt like it was just this wonderful, like, present to give myself, and then knowing that I could go forward doing that at any point in time. And I think people need to. Not that everyone can afford to pick up and move to France or study abroad, but if you get the opportunity to try something new, I say go for it. No matter how terrified you are and how you think you might fail, like, try. You'll never know. And the opportunities are few and far between. And just do it.
And there's so many cultures out there just to learn and be you know, knowledgeable about that. I think that's great.
Yeah.
To even just have that extra thing going on for you. The extra thing. Now, you also, outside of being a dynamic actress, you are a photographer.
Or you indulge
in photography, should I say.
I do indulge. I haven't in a long time. I did a lot. No, I shouldn't say not in a long time. I guess I do indulge. I just don't really call myself. I haven't called myself that since, like, college. But I was really into it in high school and college. And then part of what attracted me to working in fashion was just the love of images and composition. And Elle magazine at the time was like new and fresh, and it combined everything I love, which was these beautiful photographs by world-renowned photographers like Gilles Ben-Simon and Marc Ispat and Olivier Toscani. And I had the opportunity to meet these photographers who I'd admired for a long time, and it was really incredible. And I spend like hours on Pinterest now, and that's what I'm doing. I'm like finding my favorite. Pinterest is a little like hoarding, but without the clutter.
It is, without the clutter.
And then also
digital clutter.
And sometimes it's like shopping, but without the actual expense. Yeah. I mean, I feel very satisfied after I've created a perfect Pinterest page of whatever it is that I'm coveting at the time. But I love like hoarding photographs of just like beautiful images, whether it's, you know, the water or fashion models, beauty shots, whatever. I'm just so taken in by what people can do, like Peter Lindbergh or Patrick de Marchelier.
Oh, yeah. Those are great names, too.
Arthur Elgar. I mean, I can go on and on.
For hours.
Yeah.
Now, do you take a lot of pictures of yourself and do the Instagram thing?
I do a little. I mean, it's hard. I feel like once you have kids, the pictures stop being about you and start being about your kids. Yeah. And I don't Instagram pictures of my kids. So I've got all these photographs for me and my family and friends that I don't really share out there because they're my kids. And I kind of want to maintain their privacy as much as I can until they decide they want otherwise. So I do a few selfies every once in a while. I do a lot of food and sunset shots, probably.
Yeah, it's funny you say selfies because we talk about that subject a lot in the studio.
Especially this past week.
This past week. Go ahead, Courtney.
How did you feel about the Obama selfie controversy at the Nelson Mandela Memorial?
It didn't really bother me so much. I heard something like on NPR, I think maybe I read it. It was AP News, and the reporter was saying that, I guess the photographer who actually took the picture said, you know, this had been going, this they were like 2 hours into the ceremony, and lots had happened, and there was one moment of levity. And in the beginning, I guess they were all taking pictures, and Michelle had stopped and was focusing on something else, and he happened to get this shot. And the one shot that he got that became viral was this shot. It was like, it was a moment in the day, and it did not define the entire ceremony. And I kind of feel like people take things out of context. And there's so many people who beat up on our president and find fault in every list. Like, really? This is what we're going to pick on now? We've forgotten everything wonderful about Nelson Mandela, and we're here at his funeral and his memorial service. And what we're going to highlight is a selfie taken in a second. Like, come on. So
there's much bigger problems in the world.
Yes.
Other things to talk about. Our priorities.
Our priorities. Like your first movie, Have Plenty.
Have Plenty.
Have Plenty, which was shown at the Toronto Film Festival.
Yes.
Aww. Now, how did you get involved with the project? Because I heard you read something in the paper about it.
I did. I booked it out of Backstage, which used to be just a newspaper in New York and L.A., I guess. And now it's, you know, it's more of an internet way to, for actors to access audition material. I mean, not, sorry, casting notices from places that are like that don't have big budgets to use breakdown services, whatever. And I answered an ad in Backstage, and I went to the audition, and then I went on the callback, and I went another callback, and I booked it, and it was the first thing I did. And it was a tiny little film, and we shot it for very little money, and we went to the, what was it, Acapulco Black Film Festival at that point in time, which
it was big during that
now time. The African American was the very first one, and we were chosen to be the opening movie. Warrington Hudlin chose us to be the opening movie, and it was, it like set the course for everything, and it was huge. It was a huge, it, the response was huge immediately from that audience, and it was really, really wonderful. And we got picked up there by Tracy and Kenny Edmonds, Babyface, as some of you know him. And they signed on as executive producers, and then we got into Toronto, and in Toronto, which happened, by the way, my first week of law school.
Ooh.
Oh, yes. How'd you pull that off?
Yes. It's my very first week of law school. We got picked up in Toronto and by Harvey Weinstein and Miramax, and then we went on to do Sundance, and we had a theatrical release, and it was, it was really a big deal. And Christopher Scott Chereau was this little unknown writer, director, star. And I don't know if you have it there in your notes, but he's in the process of doing post right now on his second big film
that he's
written, directed, and I'm doing that as well.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you very much. I'm so excited. He's such a talented guy. He's very quirky. I hope he doesn't mind me. You're quirky. You know that about yourself.
It's
that,
a compliment.
That's what makes you wonderful. Super talented, interesting, unique, different, edgy, kind of offbeat guy. You know, you just kind of have to, like, get him. And I get him. And he's written this incredible, incredible script that I had to, when he sent it to me, I was, like, blown away. And it's very different from Have Plenty. It's called... Do you have the full title there? It's Sex and Violence, and it's something like, does it say it there? Something like a lesson in physics, and I cannot remember. But just remember Sex and Violence, you'll remember that part.
Which I'm sure people
I think it's like a brief lesson in the history of something physics.
A brief review of simple physics.
Thank you.
Got it all.
The voice of God.
Thank
a brief
the voice
review.
Of God from the movie.
What is it? A brief review? Say it again.
Sex and Violence, A Brief Review of Simple Physics.
A Brief Review of Simple Physics.
Okay. Sex and Violence.
I will remember that. Sorry, Chris. the script blew me away, and we shot it, you know, and it, once again, he put up his own money. We did it low completely. He wanted to do gritty. He wanted to kind of have that Have Plenty experience again when we did it free of the studio, no one getting involved, and we did it. We pulled it off, and he's doing post-production now, and it's such an incredible script. But like I said, I'm sorry, I was saying very different from Have Plenty. It's very dark and edgy and feels more like a Coen Brothers Tarantino kind of film.
Oh, I like that. Interesting. That's definitely a complete twist from the first
Very different.
What can you tell us about your character in it?
I am... Similar to Mary Jane, I am a wife whose husband is cheating on her. I don't know how this keeps happening to me, except I don't know about it as it's going on. I am a woman who's like 9 months pregnant, and the entire movie takes place over the course of maybe 2 days, I guess, maybe like 36 hours, 48 hours tops. And I am 9 months pregnant, and my mother dies suddenly. And so all this is happening in the course of the movie while my husband kind of goes out on this wild night of extravagant living. I can't say it. I don't want to give too much away.
When will it be coming out?
I don't know. Okay. We're going to go out to festivals and see.
And are you the only original cast member from Have Plenty that's in the film?
I believe I am.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Which is really...
Made an impression.
I did.
Now, when Have Plenty came out, you were saying you were in law school. And I know that you mentioned that your parents had a kind of a different direction for you.
Oh, yeah.
How is it for you to tell them that you had landed this role?
In Have Plenty?
In Have Plenty.
Well, I shot it actually before law school, so it didn't really matter. To them, it was like a dalliance. And then when the movie was picked up, you know, it was kind of like, well, you're not leaving law school. I was like, no, I'm not. And that's part of the reason I was really mainly applying to schools in New York and L.A., because I kind of wanted to, if I could continue to pursue the acting, I was going to. And so I was at Columbia, and I was able to do both. I went on auditions, and I went to class, and I made it happen, and I graduated on time, and I took the bar with the rest of my class in New York.
Oh, my goodness.
And then turned around and said, okay, that part of my life is fine. I can go back to it if I really want to go back to it. I'm still a member of the bar in New York, should I want to practice, I suppose. but it's done, and I kind of knew that wasn't really where my true passion was.
I mean, overachiever all the way. I'm like, I need to step up my game.
I could have gone to law school, Mom. I'm sorry.
Sorry. Yeah. I hope I'm not bringing up any bad.
I'm like, wow. We're having moments over here on this table here. Now, did your life change a lot after you did the film Have Plenty? I mean,
no. You know what? That first, it felt like it did, and there were moments. Like when we went to Sundance, it was surreal because, like I said, I was a student. I'm sorry, this thing is pinching my earring. I was a student at the time. I took off like 2 weeks or whatever, and I got permission from my professors and took all my books. And I had this one life in New York, and then we went to Sundance, and it was huge. I mean, it was like meeting celebrities that actors you've admired forever, and tons of press, and getting to see other incredible films. Like, I'm trying to think of what was there when we were there. Like, The Big Lebowski was there.
Oh,
like,
Big Lebowski, yeah.
It was just like, wow, this is a whole other world. And the doors opened, not to say they opened so quickly, but relatively quickly. And we were really excited and thought this was going to be the rest of our lives. And then no, not so much. I haven't been back to Sundance yet. It's been a few years, let's say. I mean, it's like, I feel like my career or acting can be a lot of it's luck. And you need to be in the right place at the right time, and then when you get there, you'd better have the talent to back it up, and then you can continue to do that. But then you want the talent to back it up, and then you have the luck again of that project actually really succeeding and hitting big and people responding to it, and then you get your next project. And so I feel like it's a lot of stops and starts, and you feel like, wow, this is great, and then you're back to auditioning the next day. And then you get something really big, like when I did National Security, that was a really big deal when I booked that. When I booked Hitch, I thought everything was going to change, and then they edited my part down to like 5 minutes, and I was like, great.
But I remember your part, though.
Thank you.
I remember your part.
A much larger part. When I tell you the first script, but like, that doesn't really matter, because no one really knows except for, well, yeah, there's a select group of us who know. but so then it's like, okay, I'm back to auditioning again, and we'll see. And but you kind of just, you do it for the love of it, because I love the craft. I loved acting, but I love being around that world. I love other actors. I love being around other artists and all the different pieces of the puzzle that want to make this come to life and make movie magic. I think it's really unique and special.
I see the sparkle in your eye.
It, because when it works and it all comes together, it's like you have to pinch yourself. It's like, I'm doing what I've always wanted to do, what I dream of doing, and yes, a lot of times it becomes about the dollar and like how many seats you sell or whatever it is or tickets you sell. But being on the receiving end of that, and I feel that way all the time. That's why I was drawn to the business, being an audience member and connecting with something on the screen that touches you in such a way that you're sitting there in your seat just crying. You can't get up and you have to watch all the credits and you can't move. Like if I can affect people that way, because I've been affected by that way so many times, and that's why I keep doing it.
Now, you work with a lot of heavy hitters, Will Smith, Martin Lawrence, you mentioned, Don Cheadle, Sarah Michelle Gellar, Bill Duke. Who do you love to work with, or who have you loved to work with the most?
I'm
sure it's a hard question with all those people.
I know. Oh, I can't pick a favorite. I don't know.
Well, what's the one that you remember?
I have a great time whenever I work with Will. I did Hitch and 7 Pounds with Will. He's pretty much Will Smith. Like, what you see is what you get. And, like, he's that dynamic from the morning when he steps into the makeup trailer till, you know, we cut and we check the gates, like, martini shot, and we're done for the day. Like, he never stops being this wonderful, approachable guy. And he never turns down an autograph or a picture. Like, he's just a really great guy, and I think that's why he's the movie star that he is. And he's a great actor, yes, but he's got this personality outside of that that's big and warm and brings people in, and it's kind of wonderful to see that happen. And so that was great. Don Cheadle was amazing because, like, gosh, I've admired his work for so long. And the first day on the set, I made the first 5 minutes. I had this, like, oh my god, it's Don Cheadle. What am I doing? And I had to, like, go into my chair, like, you have this part. This part is yours. They wanted you for a reason. You can handle it. So, like, I really had to have like a little talk with myself, because you can really talk yourself kind out of a role,
out of things,
or, or out of your confidence. Yeah. Like, yeah, you really can.
Did anyone give you any key advice while you were kind of in that beginning process in your career, a Will Smith or a Don Cheadle?
I don't know. Key advice.
Or something that you kind of took and you learned from them, and you're like, you know what, I'm going to use this.
I definitely steal things. And a lot of times it's actor things and not Will said once that he doesn't turn down any, asks for pictures or handshake or a hug or whatever, just because he says you have to realize that what might be just a moment in your life could be something much more consequential in someone else's.
That's true.
And it's like, if you don't know who that person is asking you for the question, for all you know, they have your posters on their wall, they've loved you forever, and they get 2 minutes with you. And if you ruin your image of them, I mean their image of you, it's like that can really, really hurt them. And it's like, it takes nothing from your day to be like, sure, I'll take a picture. Thank you so much for coming out. I really appreciate you being here and admiring my work. And I thought that was really, really big of him, and to see it that way, and to see people as individuals, and everyone's got their story and you don't know, and it takes nothing for you to stop and smile for a picture or sign your name and be nice.
And everyone says that about Will. I mean, everyone seems to have that same comment.
It's true. Although he does say what gives him an advantage, that he's tall. So it doesn't feel like
tall.
He's usually one of the taller guys in the room, and so it doesn't feel too claustrophobic. I think as a woman and being a petite woman, it can, but as long as you just treat people with respect.
Yeah, that's what it's all about.
Yeah. Now, what did you do specifically? Obviously, you've constantly worked over the years and had multiple jobs and things like that. What do you think you were doing specifically that kept your career going constantly, and you didn't seem to have that?
I stayed in class. I'm not in class right now, but I've been in and out of different classes over the years. And when I say in class, like, I could be in class for 4 years, 3 years in one class, and a scene study class. And it keeps you sharp when you're not working, and it keeps you on your toes, and it allows you to explore in parts that you might not necessarily be given. I mean, I don't want to, like, complain, like, oh, there are no black roles out there for black women. But, you know, they're not a ton. And in class, you can explore all of your dreams. You can play Juliet and Romeo and Juliet. You can play Lady Macbeth. You can play, you know, you can do it all. I mean, I've done scene studies in class where I've played, her name is Frances McDormand. Is that her name? Yes. Her role in Fargo.
Fargo, yeah.
Like, I get to blow. When I was very pregnant with my daughter, when I was still in acting class, my coach was like, we're putting up that scene, we're going to do the scene in Fargo. And it's like, I was playing it really 7 months pregnant with the accent and all. And it was like, it was great. Like, when do you get to do that? And I really think it's important to do that. And when you're in a scene study class with a really good teacher, I've had great teachers. Adam Lazar White is one. Jane Fleiss is another. Sandra Lee is another in New York. Sherry Shaw, sorry, I'm just thinking of people that really influenced me, that they make you do the homework in a way that you don't have to do for an audition, and you may not even do for, you probably won't do for a guest star in a TV role, you may not even do for a film unless you learn that craft. Like, you build your, there's so much on the page, and then you build your character's history, and you layer in things that you bring to the table, and that you've created, and that you can go out there and look for. And I think that makes you a deeper artist. And so that's what I, when I'm not working, that's the kind of stuff I do to keep me fresh and feeling like I'm still learning and I'm still evolving.
You mentioned that kind of the lack of roles for black actresses. But since you've had your career from the beginning, do you think that there are more opportunities now for actresses? I mean, we have the success of obviously Scandal.
You know, I was just talking to, on the car ride over here, I was talking to my friend Sandra Prosper, who's also another great actress, and we came up together doing stuff in New York first, and she was telling me that Nia Long just booked this TV show that I went out for. It's called The Divide, and if I'm wrong, I totally apologize, but I heard that she booked it, and I'd auditioned for it, and it's Tony Goldwyn, who is the president on Scandal.
Yeah.
He's producing this project.
Oh, okay.
Such an incredible script and such an incredible role for a black woman. And I just read that she got it. And I thought, God, if that's on the air, she's a lawyer and she's dealing with, you know, she's a really strong woman and she's got this husband who I think maybe he works in the DA's office. And anyway, it's loaded and layered. And it's like, if that's on the same time that Scandal's on and the same time that Being Mary Jane is on, that would be a huge coup for us to have three shows with black female leads who are smart, who are educated, who are doing things, and like, it's just, and multifaceted and layered and complex, and we just don't get that. And I feel like, wow, it's finally coming back. And I felt like when I first got into it in like the 90s or late 90s, I was inspired by all the images. And not that they were wonderful images, but we had so many films out. There was a point in time when there was like, everything from, you know, all Spike Lee stuff to John Singleton's things to, like, you know, the oh gosh, Alan, Hughes Brothers.
Yeah.
Their things were like, everyone, like, there were black movies out all the time. Yeah. It was like, look, we can work.
Yeah.
And then there was like this huge dearth of like nothing but Tyler Perry for a long time.
That's true.
And Tyler Perry has kept many of us going.
Yeah.
So, you know, thank you to Tyler Perry. But that was it. And I feel like we're on the upswing now, and I want to believe it's Scandal, it's Think Like a Man, it's the success of Best Man Holiday.
Best Man Holiday was huge
this year in black film. I mean, outside of the comedy stuff, but like, you know, obviously 12 Years a Slave and The Butler and Fruitvale Station. I mean, it's really coming. I want to believe it's coming back. There's a line in that Bill Bellamy movie. What was that Bill Bellamy movie?
Oh, How to Be a Player. I just saw that like 2 weeks ago.
Who was a light-skinned sidekick? Oh, he's like, I know, we're not hot. We're coming back, man. We're coming back. So I really feel like we're coming back.
We're coming back.
Yes, coming back. So being on the inside, do you feel like this is just sort of a part of the cycle like we're in right now and it's going to go out again? Or are you optimistic that this is something that may stay?
I'm optimistic. I remember when the Obamas were elected. When Barack Obama was elected. When the Obamas first came to Washington and the White House, I was so excited because I thought there are going to be so many more roles for educated black women because they're going to be like, oh, we need a Michelle Obama type. We need a... Mm-hmm. And nothing happened. It took a really long time. And my husband said to me, he's like, I don't want to get you to get your hopes up, but I really feel like there are going to be progressive people who feel like, well, we voted for him. We've done our part. We don't have to go and... you know, diversify everything on television and film.
Yeah.
It's like, we've got a black president. What more do you guys want?
Yeah.
And I feel like he was right. There was a period that was like, it was still fairly not so diverse. And it's starting to turn around. And I'm hoping it will continue to do so because there's so many great artists out there of color. And not just black artists, but Latino and Asian and Native American. I mean, just everything. Indian, the full... gamut, and we have so many interesting stories to tell that are outside of what we think of as mainstream American stories that they have out there. And I want to see it all. I want to experience it all. And I feel like we only grow from that.
And I've seen a couple articles with other black actresses, and they said it seemed to be a consensus that when you walk into a room now to audition, you're taken a little bit more seriously than you have in the past. So I'm hopeful that will continue.
That would be lovely. That would be nice.
That would be great.
And then you mentioned movies, and we have this year for the Oscars, which we have Fruitvale and The Butler and
12
Years a Slave. Yeah. Do you think that the Oscars will really reflect how positive and great those films were by giving them awards? Or do you think that this is something it's hype right now, but then when it comes down to award season, it'll be passed by?
Well, 12 Years a Slave, I think, is leading or tied in the Golden Globe.
It's tied for the Golden Globe,
And it's got a bunch for
with
SAG
August.
Awards as well, right.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like that's definitely going to be nominated and has a really good chance of doing performing well, and for good reason. I think it opens people's eyes in a way that they don't necessarily want them to be open, which is good. But I think it's also important that we have stories that are uplifting out there, and not every I don't want to. I hate to say this because there is some truth to it, but I don't like the fact that, or I don't want to say I don't like the fact. I would love to see more films be considered for and performers of color be considered for the Oscar that were not just telling these downtrodden stories of we are the help, or we are obese and beating our children.
Yes.
We are getting killed in the gas in a train station. Oh, we are slaves, and there are people of color doing wonderful things and achieving great heights, and I'd like to see that portrayed and recognized and ideally awarded. It would be nice. Mm-hmm. It would be nice.
Yeah.
If you could sort of come up with your recipe for progression of people of color
I like that.
In this business.
Recipe for progression.
What would be your recipe for progression from producing things that are more reflective of the culture? And
I'm writing my own stuff now. I have friends who write. I think it's important that you tell different stories and it's not the same story. Get your people together. Get a crew together. I mean, I feel like actors meet other actors in acting class. And once you do an indie or two, you start, you know people you can reach out to. And if you have a DP and he has his crew, make our own projects, make little indie films. And I want to say don't waste the opportunity. But I think if you're using your own money, you won't waste the opportunity.
That's true.
Put your own stuff out there and get it seen and go out to festivals and tell the story. Like how Ava DuVernay started out with Middle of Nowhere. And
yeah, she did.
I mean, you can't wait for studios to give you the green light to do something for $20 million. Do it for $1 million. Do it for $100,000. Do what you can and continue to put out as many stories as possible that are viable and real. And even if they're not real, even if it's your most idolized, imagined fiction of your fantasy of a black superhero, whatever, do it. Like. Yeah. Create your stuff and do it and know that if you believe in it enough, someone's going to see it and say, you know what, this is good and this is different and it's not what we've seen. And I think we're just so hungry for images of ourselves out there now, and people will respond and be happy to see something new.
Yeah, and then the great thing is, too, we have social media, which can help.
Exactly.
You can push your film out that way. We've mentioned Obama, but I think that helps too. Just
right.
to kind of people if you paying
get
attention
a screening
to your projects.
For your film at the White House.
Yes, yes. Please go to Obama.
Yeah. Obama.com. No, I've never. but yeah, I think it's tweet. I mean, I've met so many independent filmmakers on Twitter. I met Ava DuVernay on Twitter. I met Matthew Cherry on Twitter. Mm-hmm. I've met people through social media and Instagram. Like it's really kind of interesting how the world is changing, and it opens you up, and you have access to people that you did not have 10 years ago.
Yeah, that's true.
You do. And if you have something viable and smart and good that you want to put out there, you can make those connections and do it. And don't feel like you're in this, even if you're live in a small town somewhere in West Virginia, you're not really, because you've got this World Wide Web thing that connects you to everyone.
To everybody, yeah, universally.
Yeah.
Now, the big series is coming out January
7th.
Mary Jane.
Viable and brilliant.
Viable and brilliant.
And
the market
smart.
Has been brilliant.
Oh,
I see
goodness.
The ads everywhere, and the anticipation is huge.
Yes. First of all, huge. I don't even know who to start thanking. Mara Brockakiel for coming up with this character.
Yeah, she's unbelievable.
We were talking about my girlfriend and I on the phone the way over here. Like how she's like Superwoman. Like she's beautiful. She's got a great marriage. She's got two cute kids. She's an incredible writer. She's smart. Like there's nothing this woman cannot do. But she has created a project that I am so proud to be a part of, and she's written it so well and multi-layered and multifaceted, and it's just incredible. And Salim is an awesome director.
Yeah.
It was really my first time working with him. Was on this project, and it was. I love the way he directors find different ways to kind of like needle you or pull at certain things to get certain things out of your performance, and some of them do it in a way that can be abrasive or abusive or not very nice, and you know what they're going for, but you'd wish they'd taken a different tact, and some of them don't even know how to do it, and like if you're in this business long enough, you meet the full spectrum.
Right.
He has a way of bringing you to do something, and you feel like, damn, that was good. And he was like, that was really good. now try it. And it's like, man, I just gave you something that was good. You knew that was good. I knew that was good. Everyone knows that was good. What are we doing? I'm tired. But it's like, now that you're tired,
let's
do it again.
Let's take it to another level. Right.
And it's like, that was great, whatever. But now I want to do it. Now you're getting angry at me. Do it again. Like, it was just, he just kept pushing you into a way that it was not abrasive or abusive at all. It was just like, wow, I didn't know I could even get to this. Like, thank you. Thank you for this opportunity and letting us play. And Omari and I especially, we had much more, when Gabrielle and I shoot together, it's much more confrontational and we play, but it's still within a certain framework because we're strangers, you know, as characters. But Omari and I are married, a longtime married couple who's going through this like hell. And when we get to play, it's like, Mara said to me that it's like, when I watch those scenes, it's like jazz.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that's what it was. Like, we had such an incredible time tearing each other up and ripping each other apart and loving each other and adoring each other and hating each other and loathing each other all within a scene over and over and over again. And it was really wonderful for them to allow us to do that. And BET has just been so incredible championing this project and putting it out there. And hopefully people will watch and tune in, and I think they will love it. Gabrielle's work is tremendous. And yesterday I saw, we had the premiere in L.A. here for the first episode of the first season, and I saw performances by Lisa Vidal that I hadn't seen before that were just, like, blew me out of the water. And Latarsha Rose, who's also a longtime friend of
love
mine.
Love Latarsha.
Mm-hmm. And her work is just, across the board, the acting is supreme, and it's different, and we don't see these actors enough, and they've finally been given opportunity to really play and do their thing, and it's good. It's really
that's what
good.
Everyone,
and I'm a little biased.
Everyone's saying the buzz is out for this show.
It's good.
And then you play Avery Daniels,
and so
Omari is your husband, and he's having an affair with Gabrielle
Union. Having an affair with Gabrielle, yes.
Now, you guys have been...
With Mary Jane, I should say.
With Mary Jane,
before we started
Sorry, I know, right? I know.
No,
It'll be all over Twitter when we leave here.
What happened.
Since you and Gabrielle have been friends for so long, is it tough when those scenes where you have to kind of go at each other, is it tough?
It's easier because we don't have to worry about each other's feelings like, oh, what, this actor doesn't know me. Does she know that I'm not really that angry at her? You know what I mean? Like, when you're meeting a new actor, you kind of have to quickly figure out your relationship and your character's history and how each other works and reacts and what's going to tick you off or offend you or whatever. Yeah. Like, it's hard to know, like, how much you can push someone's buttons before they feel like maybe she's crossed the line and now she's not acting or she's you know what I mean? Like, it's
you can feel that.
It's a weird kind of thing. It can be very weird. We hit the ground running because we know each other so well, and we just jumped into it, and we had a blast, and it was really lovely. It's like, you know, it's like playing with your sister. It's like doing dress up with your sister. It's like someone's paying us, and we're just playing, and they're doing our hair and makeup, and there are lights and cameras here, and like, and we can just do this, and it was really great.
And your characters, I think I read that you have a type A personality.
Yes,
type.
I'm very type A.
How similar in real life are you to your character?
A little too similar, probably. she's a lawyer, too. She's got two kids. She's happily married, or so she thinks. She's probably, probably a little more reserved and conservative than I am. And she's a little more... maybe tolerant of her husband's indiscretion than I would be. That's a nice way of putting it.
That's a very politically correct way of saying it.
But otherwise, there are a lot of similarities, except that, and she's definitely stronger and more confident than I am, I think. Because I know that when I'm playing her, I feel like I'm bringing on something that's not me. Like, she doesn't have very much vulnerability, which I feel like I naturally do. And I had to, like, fight against that every time they say action. It's like, okay, I have to check Robin at the door. There are a couple of scenes where the vulnerability comes through, but for the most part, she's, like, not letting you see what's really going on.
What's going on
there. Not the sadness, anyway, or the grief or the desperation.
Was that the most challenging part for you about playing her?
Yes. Yes, I would say so.
And what do you think that, how does she kind of, like, that character help you in real life as far as, like, expanding who you are as a person?
Well, if my husband ever cheats on me, I will know how to go about it. I will know how to approach the mistress. not just use a gun like was my original plan. I think that she's it's kind of nice to know that you can put on this brave face and have a steely front when you feel like your insides are crumbling.
Yeah.
And I don't, that doesn't often happen to me. Like I because I'm an actor and I like to feel, I allow my insides to crumble. Like, oh my God, this is the worst thing. And I've got this little, my first real acting teacher, Sandra Lee, is back in New York. And she's like this older woman. She played Tiger Lily, I think it was in the original Peter Pan. And she's pint, like she might be 4'10" on a good day. And but she was like dynamic and strong. And she'd always tell you, an actor never forgets. And like, you remember everything. And whenever I'm feeling something really huge, I've got this, an actor never forgets. So I'll be at a friend's funeral. And part of me is, there's a little nagging thing like, remember this, you're going to need this. I'm like, go away. I need to just be in this moment. But I really feel like as an actor, I just feel everything. And this character is about like, I'm not gonna, even if I am feeling all that, you're not gonna see it.
Now, how do you balance all of this? You're an in-demand actress. You just wrote a novel.
I did.
And family. How do you balance all three of those things?
I don't get a lot of sleep.
I would imagine not.
I don't get a lot of sleep. I feel like there's a time for everything. I mean, when I'm not acting, you know, there are periods that when you're not acting, even if you're working on a project, you can be in, they're not shooting. And so, like with Mary Jane, we shot in Atlanta. But if I'm back in L.A., I'm not acting. And so I've got time to be with my kids and my husband, and I've got time to write when my kids are in school, and I've time to, like, do things for myself. And when I'm working, I'm working, and that's pretty much it. Unless I'm on location, then once you have days off on location, you've got nothing to do, and everyone else is working. You don't have any friends. You're in a, you know, depending where – I just came back from – doing a TV show called Mind Games.
Mm-hmm.
It's a new ABC mid-season replacement with Steve Zahn and Christian Slater, and I shot it in Chicago. I'd never been to Chicago, and I got to explore Chicago, and I got to start writing a new screenplay. Like, I got to, like, do a lot of things because I had, in my downtime, there's nothing to do. I don't have very many friends in Chicago. But if I do, they're not actors, so they're not, like, free.
Right, right.
Can anyone have brunch today?
Right, right.
What do you mean you guys have
right,
jobs?
Right, it's Wednesday. What are you talking about?
It's really a luxury of living in L.A. that someone is free to see you at
any time.
And you forget, too, while you're
totally
here.
Forget.
You know, but you go back other places, you're like, wait a minute.
Like, no,
this isn't the reality.
Right.
What's going on?
Where are you all going at 9 in the morning?
All right, speaking of writing, can you tell us a little bit about your book?
And it's a labor of love. It's a novel that I spent about 5 years working on, this past 5 years. And it's a love story at the heart of it. It's a little semi-autobiographical about this woman looking back at her youth and a relationship in specifically that changed the course of her life. And she is a Jamaican-Chinese woman living in New York, and struggling with figuring out what to do with her life and, you know, expectations from her parents and her friends and wanting to tap into her artistic, creative side but feeling like she can't because her family's expecting too much of her. And she gets on a train one day and she meets this man who's complete opposite of her, and it opens her up to new ideas and new ways of thinking and just new ways of viewing herself, and it's kind of about her search for identity.
And where can fans find your book?
Right now, nowhere. But once it's out there, once I get a publisher and this it's signed, sealed, and delivered, I will be tweeting it and Facebooking it, Instagramming it, and publicizing it.
And we'll have it here on VHL too.
Yes, I'll be back
to
promote
the book. Exactly.
Yes.
What made you say I'm going to write a book?
Oh, God, what made me say I was going to write a book? I've always written. Like, I did it. I do it for fun. It's always been a way for me to clear my head. From the time I was little, it was like that was a thing. The two things I did were act and write. And I wrote my first book when I was 14, and it was like 884 pages, but handwritten. And I know. And it's in my garage if anyone wants to see it.
I was going to say, do you still have it?
I still have
it. What was that about?
Yeah,
I don't even want to tell you what it was about. What do you think 14-year-olds write about when their imaginations go wild? And then I started another book when I was like 16. That went up to about 1,200 pages, and I thought, this is not going anywhere. And I put it away. And I kind of felt like I've spent my entire life starting books and then like putting it aside. And then this one I started off as just the first opening chapter, and I really, really liked it. And then I thought, I'm going to give it a try for another chapter, and then another chapter. And then after three chapters in, I was like, not only am I going to finish this and make this a book, but I'm gonna publish this one. This is the one.
That was the one. That's the winner.
Yeah. And I feel like it was just being older and having more perspective and becoming a better writer and having more life experience and a less myopic view of the world that you're able to bring in your life and your experiences. And I think it makes a fuller story.
You've also added producer to your credits, and you had a film called
Miss
Dial.
I'm getting hot.
And it's very warm.
It makes me sound like I'm busy. Then I'm really busy.
Listen, I looked at your resume. You're pretty busy.
Multi-talented career.
Actress, writer, producer. So it's Miss Dial.
Miss Dial.
And it's a comedy.
It's a comedy. It came out earlier this year. You can find it on iTunes or Amazon or Netflix, Redbox, I think. There's a bunch of places. If you just Google it, you'll find it. And Mrs. M-I-S-S Dial. And it was this concept I came up with a couple of years ago. My husband originally came up with this idea of what if you could do a movie with no two actors in the same shot? Theoretically, they could upload themselves in their remote places with a camera. And then we figured out that that couldn't be done because you'd have issues with sound and lighting and so forth. But we approached a friend of ours, writer, director, Dave Steinberg. And David said, you know what, I could write a script with a story with no two actors in the same shot. Let me give it a shot. And we're like, okay, go for it. And he came up with the Miss Dial script. And he did it like in 3 weeks or something crazy. Like it was unbelievable. And it was really good and really enjoyable, and we thought, okay, let's do this. And Dave got the money from his parents, and like I said, get your friends,
whoever you can get it from.
Get your crew.
We got a crew. We hired all of our friends. That's why you'll see like Gabrielle has a cameo in it. Dule Hill has a cameo. Hill Harper has a cameo. Like I pulled out everyone I know. Nicole Lynn. Like I mean, it was great. We did it. We shot it. I believe, 10 days.
And would you like to do more producing?
Yes. There's a part of it that really appeals to me. I think it appeals to the lawyer side of me, like that problem solving, really, analytical. Producing is a lot like putting together a really big, big puzzle.
And yeah.
Maybe that's what it is, or maybe it's something else. Because sometimes one piece falls out and everything. Maybe it's like putting together a house of cards and one card comes out, everything comes tumbling down. And you're trying to like get it back together again, because you're really putting in all these, when you're doing, anyway, specifically with a low budget, so much can go wrong.
And yeah, that's true.
And you really are depending on people to show up when they say they're going to show up and keep their word and perform and do everything in a good manner and timely manner and put it together. And this was great. We had the opportunity to work with our friends, and
that's always
fun. We cranked it out. We had an incredible production manager who's now a producer as well. Elizabeth Hughes, and she ran a tight ship. She was like this tiny little woman. She's about 5'2", maybe. And I've never seen a UPM like this. I mean, every day we were on time. Like, it was like incredible. Like, we did a feature-length film in 10 days. Like, studios, just to give you an idea, they do a feature-length film in, like, 3 months.
Three months, I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah.
And was it difficult to wear both hats? I mean, being the actor in the film and also kind of producing and
I'd done it before. We did something called This Is Not a Test that I shot in, 2006 with Hill Harper and Bellamy Young, who's now on Scandal. She's a first lady on Scandal. And Tom Arnold. So I've done it before, and I kind of like it. I don't know if I could direct an act. Like, I see what people like Chris Chereau when I'm in a scene with him, and he's like, hold on. Let me see the whatever. And he gets back into the shot.
Yeah,
and he's
like,
and he's pulling. Yeah. He's like, let me see how that looks. No. Turn a little. Okay. Action. And it's just like, I was like, I don't know how you do that because I need to be in my acting.
Yeah, that's hat. Seems difficult.
And I feel like when you're producing, you can be in your actor hat when you're acting. But in between action and cut, or between cut and the next action, whatever, you can go back into producing if you need to. I feel like the director, you've got to be there the entire time. That's just my. But I think people would probably agree.
I do.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how you direct and
I don't know how.
It's a challenge, I'm sure.
It's a special kind of brain that works.
Yeah, I was going to say, so you got to use different parts of the brain for that one.
Which is why I said Chris Chereau is, he's quirky and offbeat, but he's pretty brilliant at what he does.
For sure.
What role would you like to play that you haven't played yet?
Ooh. I never know the right answer to this one. I mean, I feel like I think about this all the time, and then I it escapes me. I would love to do a great period piece, and maybe something unexpected, like some period, like something that takes place in like Moorish Spain in like the 1600s or whatever, like that we don't see people of color in, because I don't know why they seem to take us out of period pieces unless we're
there.
Because
we weren't there, apparently.
Yeah, apparently we weren't there.
We didn't exist. Something like that, or, you know, something...
Maybe a French film.
I would love to do that. I've begun researching on the story of this this French slave, and a slave who was in France who kind of thought she was... She didn't think she was white because she was dark-skinned, but she thought she was like everyone else. And it was this realization. It was based on a true story. I think it takes place like in the 1700s. Something like that. I would love to do. I'd love to have the opportunity to do it.
I think you should produce and write and direct that and star in it and get an Oscar and all that.
I would love that. And I'm working on something now that I'm really excited about. I don't want to talk about it, but it's something that the project I'm writing now that I would love to, I'm going to produce and star in. Oh, an Oscar's a little... Whatever, we'll see.
I got a plan for you, Robin. Yeah.
Who do you want to work with that you haven't worked with yet?
Cate Blanchett.
She's unbelievable.
That'd be great.
Matt Damon. Viola Davis. Meryl Streep. I mean,
the list goes on.
I know.
That's a good list. All right.
If you could use one word to define
Denzel.
Of course, Denzel.
I have not met Denzel.
Really?
Yes. Which is kind of crazy because I feel like I've been in Hollywood so long and Black Hollywood is only so small and you at least see everyone eventually at a party or something. I've never even seen Denzel in person. And the irony is that Denzel's mom was my mother's hairdresser for years and did my mom's hair for her wedding. I know that's totally
Hey, it all works. And you know what? Now you put it out in the universe. Yes. So what's going to happen is you're going to leave here and you're going to run into Denzel.
I was just talking about you.
I'm Black Hollywood Live. If you could use one word to define you, what would it be?
Passionate.
It's a great word.
And determined. Determined as well. I don't know. Which one?
Passionately determined.
Passionately determined. And where can fans find you on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook and all
at
that
Robin
fun
Lee,
stuff?
At Robin Lee. And on Facebook, I believe it's The Robin Lee.
The Robin Lee. Courtney?
Yes, save it.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Stuart Starlet.
You can find me at Daryl Kristen on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And be sure to tune in January 7th
BET, 10 p.m.
10 p.m. Being Mary Jane. You're going to see Robin and all of her greatness.
Thank you.
And we're so looking forward to it. Tell a friend. Bring a group. Have a Being Mary Jane party. Make sure you support it. It's going to be a great show.
And we'll be live tweeting as well. So.
Oh, yes.
Thank you for watching Black Hollywood Live Portraits with Robin Lee. And we will see you soon.
Thank you.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Spector, Daryl Kristen, and the entire BHL staff, we would like to thank you for tuning in to the Black Hollywood Live Network. If you have questions or comments, tweet us at BHL Online or email us at info@blackhollywoodlive.com. For more exclusive content, visit blackhollywoodlive.com. This has been a presentation of the Black Hollywood Live Network.
Hollywood redefined.
The views expressed here are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of BHL or its owners or principals.
Thanks for watching Black Hollywood Live on YouTube. For more in-depth interviews and news, subscribe to our channel here and be sure to share your opinion in the comment section below here. See you soon, everyone. Bye.